with carrying a corner of a crate. They staggered under the weight, even with powered armor and gravity-assisted technology.
"This is bullshit," Carlos complained. "Why do you get to parade around while we grunt and struggle, McGill?"
I shrugged. "I guess the officers can recognize a winner when they see one." We began a less comfortable part of the journey, escorting our cargo to a waiting skimmer. The skimmer was one of the open-air types, essentially a flying barge. The back was open and bigger than a freight car on an old railway. We loaded up the boxes and stood around them, bracing our feet and looking worriedly at the railing. It was only about a half meter high, not enough to keep a man safely on the back of this thing if it took a hard turn. There wasn't even a warning siren from the pilot when we took off. Worse, the initial launch was anything but smooth. We powered up into the air, swirled around, slewing and heaving, then leveled off and flew at great speed into the hurtling air traffic.
"What the hell is with this pilot?"
Kiwi shouted, coming to stand near me. She put a hand on my shoulder to steady herself. My heavy weaponeer suit was equipped with auto levelers and could serve a regular trooper as an anchor in a pinch.
"I don't want to let my feet move," I said. "You take a look. Is he by any chance a bluish turtle-looking guy?"
Kiwi stretched and leaned out to get a look at the creature at the helm up front. She nodded.
"Yeah," she said. "Bluish, and that's definitely a shell."
Crap. These guys are crazy drivers. Hang on, everybody. I eyed our guests. It was better than looking down at the heaving streets a kilometer below. They seemed to be in a better mood now. The somber colors were gone. Their suits ran with rippling pinks and blues over their bodies, and their shoes were a distinctive shade of gold. I had no idea what any of that meant, but I surmised they were happier than they'd been when they were marching through the streets. About then, everyone yelled in alarm in my headphones. A sickening feeling of falling had freaked out all of us. We plunged down like a leaf dropped from a tree directly toward the ground. We didn't tip over or nose downward. It was more like we'd lost power.
"Platoon, brace yourselves,"
Leeson ordered. He needn't have bothered. Both Kiwi and Carlos had decided to hang on to me. Others had found cables, protruding equipment, anything. I didn't think it was going to matter if we hit at this velocity. Leeson came on platoon chat and sounded worried.
"Can anyone raise Claver? I'm not sure if we're out of control or what."
We tried, but no one could connect with the Germanica adjunct. "Shall we try to take over the helm, sir?" I asked on platoon chat.
"Can you fly this thing, McGill?"
answered Adjunct Leeson.
"Probably better than that crazy turtle."
"All right. If you can move without falling overboard, recon and take appropriate action. I'm down to crawling myself."
Most of the troops were crawling. I commanded my feet to move, and they did, dragging Carlos and Kiwi with me.
"Let's go. That's an order," I told them,
and they reluctantly grabbed for less stable handholds. Strangely, the crates seemed glued into place, as did the tow. Kiwi and Carlos, along with most of the others, had figured this out and began clinging to the crates. I marched carefully in an effort to keep my magnetized feet close to the deck of the skimmer so they could clamp on with every step. Fortunately, it was made of metal, unlike the crates. To speed things up, I grabbed the nearest crate and hand-over-handed my way toward the front of the vessel. As I came up to the last crate, I was surprised to see old Silver standing there among the tow. He seemed to be chatting unconcernedly with our employers.
"Sir," I asked him, "why are we falling like a stone?"
He craned his neck around and looked at me. His hair shone like liquid mercury in the artificial sunlight.
"What are you doing up here? Get back to your post, specialist."
I was confused, but I could see the blue turtle was still at the helm, flying with vigor.
"The platoon commander sent me up here," I said. "He thought something might be wrong with the helm controls."
"Good Lord, what a bunch of old women,"
Claver said. I blinked at him and frowned.
"If you don't need assistance, I'll get back to the crates."
"You do that, and tell Leeson I've got a spare set of balls he can use until he locates his own."
"You can tell him that yourself, sir,"
I suggested. I'll open up a channel for you.
He made a dismissive gesture, waving me off, then turned back to his alien buddies. I made a gesture of my own behind his back. Every time I interacted with this guy, I found I liked him less than before. I'd no sooner turned around and taken my first step back toward the crates when the world was plunged into blackness. My first thought was that we'd hit bottom, but there was no impact, no screams. Well, maybe there were a few of those from our less brave members, but we were definitely still flying. I looked upward as my eyes were drawn by the only source of bright light. Above was a shrinking square of brilliance. We dropped into some kind of a shaft. There was no sensation of slowing down. If anything, we were going down faster than before. It occurred to me that after we were to pick up our cargo, we were to transport it to the vents. By all accounts, they were at the bottom of this station. Suddenly, everything made sense. At least, it did if you were an insane turtle.
Sir, I said, linking with Leeson privately. I think we're okay. The pilot is taking us down a shaft to the bottom of the station.
Is that what Claver told you? He's still ignoring my comm requests.
More or less, I answered. He put it more colorfully, sir.
What does that mean?
He mentioned your genitalia, making an unfavorable comparison with his.
Leeson didn't often show emotion of any kind, but I began sensing a current of anger.
I see, he said. We took the money he arranged, so now we're his whipping boys. He's having a laugh and taking us on a joyride. Fine.
He gave a general order to seal our suits. Helmets were to stay on and visors were to stay shut. I recalled from the briefing that air was bad down below the station's street level, and I thought it was a sensible precaution. We halted soon after that, creating a mixture of relief and pain for everyone aboard. Relief because we were no longer rocketing down into darkness, and pain because the stop was so bone-shuddering hard that our legs barely supported our bodies when we hit bottom.
"Come on, come on!"
shouted Claver, slamming his hands together and walking the length of the skimmer.
"Get your crates off the skimmer, you lazy sons of bitches. We've got a schedule to keep."
This was the first I'd heard of a schedule, but it made a kind of sense. We certainly seemed to be in a hurry.
"Are we late to meet the freighter, sir?" I asked.
Claver peered at me.
"You again," he said. "You ask too many questions, you know that? You'd never make rank in my outfit."
It took a few minutes, but we managed to get the cargo off the skimmer. The aliens strolled down the ramp after their crates. They no longer seemed nervous. They were pleased with themselves instead. Most of them were wearing a shimmering green now, a favorite shade among their species. I looked around, and the sights were indeed impressive. Massive machinery rotated and spun around us. Devices, as huge as they were mysterious, clanked and made pounding sounds. As far as my eyes could see, the equipment stood in ranks and rows. Between the machines were crisscrossing lines of metal, as if terrifically huge grates covered the landscape.
"This is the vents," Claver said. "If you look closely down at the vents themselves, you'll find the most wretched members of society in the star system. Those are what we call breathers."
We looked, and indeed I did see individuals here and there. There were all sorts of creatures down here. The variety alone was impressive. Most were sitting along the metal walkways that now I realized made up the vents themselves. Misty gases gusted up now and then from the depths below them, obscuring the unfortunates.
"You see, oxygen costs money," Claver said. "Nothing is free on Tech World. If you hit rock bottom, they let you come down here to breathe for free, but you won't last too long."
"What do they eat?" Carlos asked, fascinated by the pathetic breathers.
"Each other, mostly," Claver said.
Then he cackled. I wasn't sure if he was joking or not, but he clearly thought his answer was hilarious.
Another skimmer arrived about 2 minutes later. It didn't come right out and land next to us, however. Instead, it hovered a distance away over the vents. I caught a flashing of lights between the aliens and the second skimmer. Finally, cautiously, the second skimmer approached ours. It sat down nearby and crushed a breather callously.
"Did that pilot just kill a guy?"
I asked Carlos.
"Yeah, I think so."
Frowning, I watched as a second delegation of the Tau approached. They carried a single crate that was smaller than ours.
"I feel like I'm watching a ransom being paid," I said.
"Maybe you are,"
Carlos agreed. The two groups of aliens met, and their clothing changed from one color to another in rapid succession. I knew they used these colors to communicate moods in subtle ways. It was almost subconscious behavior for them. For them, it was similar to our body language. Finally, a signal was given. The bargain, whatever it was, had been approved. A group of figures carried the small crate closer at the same time we carried our larger boxes to them. I got the surprise of my life when I recognized the people carrying the smaller crate. They were legionnaires. Germanica legionnaires. Chapter 12. The Germanica troops eyed us, and we returned their gaze levelly. There was only a single squad on their side, whereas we had a full platoon. We stared at one another uncomfortably across big gaps between the crisscrossing steel roadways that made up the grate we were walking on. Thick vapors drifted around us before being sucked into the giant squares of the grate and down into a hot abyss below. I could only imagine what it would be like to step off the side and fall into the oxygen reprocessing systems. I heard gears and grinding sounds down there, on top of the bubbling of unknown liquids. Falling could only result in an unpleasant death. The two groups of Tau were still talking, and their suits flashed, displaying their excited moods. I hoped the negotiations were going well. I wasn't about to shoot a Germanica trooper just because some alien had paid my team a few extra credits. Fortunately, the deal went smoothly. Both sides parted, and we were left with the small crate. The other troops loaded our larger, heavier crates, one at a time, onto their skimmer.
"What the hell do you think is in these things, Carlos?" I asked.
He appeared thoughtful.
"There are only a limited number of possibilities. It must be something valuable enough to be worth all this security and sneaking around. Probably something illegal. Otherwise, why are we doing the deal on the vents?"
"Why, indeed?"
asked Adjunct Claver. He'd come up to us while we stood and talked.
"I hope you two gentlemen are comfortable and well rested."
"As a matter of fact, I'm feeling a little sleepy, sir," Carlos said. "Maybe we should all take five on this lovely—"
"Shut up and get up that ramp. You two are an embarrassment. Look at my troops over there. One single squad of my men from Germanica is shouldering that load without a complaint in the bunch. Now those are what I call soldiers."
"Sir," I asked, "did you say those men are under your command?" He looked at me sharply.
"Not right now. You rookies are my babysitting mission for the day. Get moving."
The Tau rushed forward when the Germanica people retreated, and were soon grunting and heaving with effort as they lifted the single small crate. They didn't let us help them. They loaded the small box by themselves. The minute we were all back aboard the skimmer, it took off with a sickening lurch. We didn't even have the larger grav-locked crates to hold on to this time, but at least we knew we weren't going to die, not unless the turtle screwed up. We zoomed up the shaft until we popped out into the open again, blinking in the artificial sunlight. I opened my visor and sucked in the relatively fresh air. We flew with relative grace toward the financial district. There, massive structures like pyramids stood in rows. I recognized them from Natasha's discussion of landmarks. The buildings were the Imperial Banking Outlets. Financial institutions were technically independent within the Empire, but the Galactics kept a pretty tight leash on them. All large credit transactions were recorded and reported back to the core systems, or at least that's how it was supposed to work. We landed at the foot of the largest pyramid. For the first time, I saw old Silver was alert and even concerned.
Okay, look alive, troops. Circle up. Guns pointed away from the cargo.
Are there any dangers we should be made aware of, adjunct?
Leeson asked.
No, nothing in particular. But this is the moment of truth. We're earning our pay right here, right now.
The aliens swarmed around the small crate on the skimmer and spread their hands out, urging us back with clicks and translated statements of no. They didn't want any more help from us. We let them circle around the small crate and watched them lift it with difficulty. I unlimbered my heavy cannon and put it on my shoulder. I wasn't too worried as I watched the surrounding crowd. Some looked like your typical pack freaks that wandered the station's streets, but most were Tau, and there were plenty of them. In fact, most of the passers-by wore rich, shimmering clothing that dazzled the eye. Natasha had spent most of the day with the auxiliary personnel. Techs and bio specialists usually didn't carry crates and threaten people with guns. She had been apart from me, but now she came to my position and pointed into the crowds. I followed her gesture but didn't see anything unusual. It was just a knot of Tau on a walk. Sure, the group she pointed to were moving in a pack of perhaps 20 individuals, but there was nothing unusual about that. "Hi, Tasha," I said. "What's wrong?" She frowned at the group. "Their colors. That's what's wrong." I looked again and saw maroon bodies and silver shoes. I shrugged. "So they like purple, so what?"
"That's not right for going to the bank. That's a color worn at solemn events, like funerals or weddings. And I don't understand the silver shoes. That's not even on the list."
I laughed. "I can think of plenty of reasons to be depressed in front of a bank," I said. "Maybe their apartments were foreclosed on."
"I'm reporting it to Leeson anyway," she said, activating her comm link.
Just to be sure, I swung my weapon to cover the knot of Tau in question. They were approaching, walking down the street toward the same cavernous bank entrance that our charges were now heading toward.
"All right," Veteran Harris shouted. "Our orders are to hold our ground. The Tau are going to carry their package into the bank. Once it's there, we've completed our mission. Stand by."
I clanked to the edge of the skimmer, stepped over the low rail, and hopped down onto the street. A few other troopers positioned themselves on the ground after I did. No one really wanted to be close to where they were just coming down the ramp. Our clients were straining, heaving. I wasn't sure why they didn't let us help them with their load. With exoskeletal strength and auto-assist servos in our arms, I was sure we could lift that box like it was nothing. Perhaps it was chance, or maybe some part of me had done it on purpose, but I found myself positioned directly between the approaching group of locals and the struggling group carrying the crate. Then I heard a cracking sound. I turned around, realizing it had come from the crate. The Tau had dropped it, and it was flat on the ground. One of them was screeching, and I saw his foot was pinned underneath. Syrupy black blood flowed.
"Help them out! McGill, lend a hand!" Adjunct Leeson called to me.
I was close, so I clanked over to them. I tossed a glance over my shoulder and noticed the mob with the odd colors showing had halted. They'd stopped walking closer and were just standing there watching the spectacle. The Tau, struggling with their box, hissed at me, but then waved me forward when I pantomimed lifting their box. I could tell they weren't able to move it any further by themselves. Heaving on the crate, I was shocked at how heavy it was. I grunted and strained, managing to get a corner up. The Tau, whose foot had been trapped, managed to pull it out, but then I lost my grip, and the crate slammed right down again. I braced myself and tried shoving it. I thought maybe it might be stuck on something. If I could slide the box to one side, it might come free.
My suit registered 3 tons of lateral force, and I smelled a hot odor. Then finally, it shifted. Like an object breaking free from a frictional hold, it slid about a meter forward. The Tau chattered with enthusiasm. One of them spoke to me.
Big man, push more.
I activated my headset. I need a little help, adjunct. This thing is stuck on something.
Right, Carlos, Kiwi, get up there and push.
Sir,
I heard Sargon shout.
Request permission to manhandle that box. McGill is a known weakling.
Sargon was the other weaponeer assigned to my platoon. He was large, strong, and a terrible braggart.
Denied. Stay here with me on the skimmer, specialist. I don't want both my weaponeers farting around with a box instead of manning their weapons.
Kiwi and Carlos arrived. Carlos kicked me in the ass as he stepped close, but I could hardly feel it through my armor.
You're like a mule put out to stud, McGill. Useless, he said.
I would have liked to kick him back, but there was a crowd forming now, and I didn't like it. Kiwi and Carlos threw their shoulders into the effort, but the crate did little more than rock from side to side.
Damn, what's in this thing?
Carlos asked.
It must be stuck on something,
Kiwi said, getting down on her knees to look under it.
That's not it, I said. Seems like it's gotten heavier somehow.
Using a private channel, I contacted Natasha.
Hey, could you see if there's something wrong with these grav clamps? I asked her.
I think that's what's going on. They've malfunctioned, and they're trying to clamp the box down to the street.
Ah, she said. That would explain a lot.
She asked permission to move forward to my position out in the open, and Leeson reluctantly gave it. After a second, she was running instruments over the box. In the meantime, the Tau were losing patience. They were so close to their goal and yet unable to reach it. I could tell they were debating among themselves and becoming increasingly nervous. Claver, growling in frustration, marched down the ramp toward us.
Great, Carlos said. Look who's coming. Maybe he'll add a few ounces of lift and fix everything.
Natasha looked up at me in bewilderment after she'd finished her examination.
You're right, she said. The grav clamps are active. This crate has been glued to the ground with about 5,000 kilos of excess force.
Well, turn it off, roared Old Silver.
He now stood among us with his leathery hands on his hips. He was the only man not wearing armor in the unit. I wondered how he'd survived so very long with the kind of attitude he'd displayed thus far.
Carlos was ahead of me for once in his life.
We've got a local with a weapon, sirs, he shouted.
He lifted his rifle and directed it toward the group of Tau who were watching us intently.
Sling guns, shouted Claver. No firing here, too many civvies.
Reluctantly, we all slung our guns. That was the moment they'd been waiting for, I think. Looking back, I figured they'd been worried about our presence and had been hoping we'd pull out and leave our clients, struggling with their impossible burden, on the steps of the bank. The strangely colored Tau moved with sudden decision. They pulled out short-barreled, stubby weapons and spread out, filtering into the crowd. To my credit, it wasn't me who reacted first. Carlos had always been the jumpy sort. He unslung his weapon and aimed it in their direction. He didn't fire, but he was clearly threatening them.
Don't shoot, roared Claver. I can talk to them. Leeson, control your men. We can't afford to have an incident right here in the middle of...
A shot rang out from the crowd, sparking and burning a scorch mark on Carlos's armor. That was all it took to put everything into motion. We were Legion Varus troops, that's all I can say. We're not like other legionnaires, I'll be the first to admit it. But I don't blame our heritage or our training. We were so accustomed to deadly danger, so familiar with death, that in the thick of combat we obeyed animal instincts more than we did the orders of an officer, especially orders from someone like Old Silver. We unslung our weapons as a group and aimed them at the Tau that were moving to surround us. The crowds were surging away and trying to melt into side streets, but the bandits who'd pulled out their submachine-like weapons grabbed individuals to use as shields. I can say with near certainty that it was their side that opened fire.
A strange sound ripped the air. It wasn't like a gun, not exactly. It was more like a rapid series of gas releases, a loud series of chuffing sounds that were quickly joined by many others. Explosive pellets rained on my squad mates. Keevy spun around and fell but got back up again. Her armor had taken the brunt of it, but she seemed to be moving slowly. Carlos took shelter behind a crate, laying his rifle over the top of it. Natasha was crawling on the ground. I brought around my plasma weapon, but I didn't fire. Claver was right on one count. The area was full of innocent bystanders. If I released a charge into the crowd, I'd splatter a dozen unfortunates. On impulse, I aimed my belcher at the ground and discharged it. A blaze of light gleamed and the puffcrete melted away. A smoking hole revealed the level below the street we stood on. I'd been hoping that my display of firepower would cause our assailants to retreat, but it had the opposite effect. They seemed to believe the fight had turned into all-out war, and they all blazed away, spamming us with pellets that popped and flared against my armor. Our Tau clients weren't armored, and things went badly for them. A glance told me they were all down. The shimmering, non-existent clothing wavered and blurred over their bodies, which lay all around their precious crate in various states of death. "Return fire!" Leeson shouted. "Single shots only. Mark your target."
"No, damn it!" shouted Claver.
I'd figured he was probably dead by now, but even without armor, he'd scuttled like a rat and was lying at the bottom of the steps, sheltering between two dead Tau. Once we were away from Earth, Legion Varus troops were only obligated to follow the orders of Galactics and our own officers. That's what independence was all about, and we'd voted to keep it just a few weeks ago. Ignoring Claver, our troops shouldered their weapons and sighted carefully. They popped shots steadily into the enemy, who seemed like untrained amateur thugs to me. Six or seven of them went down, but there were plenty more, and they didn't look like they were running away. For me, the fight was frustrating. My big gun was anything but precise. All I could do was absorb fire. I decided to change tactics. Slinging my cannon, I spread my arms wide and extended two force blades, one from each wrist. Then I charged the crowd. This development startled everyone. I found I'd even surprised myself when I reached the lines of screaming civvies and thugs. I'm sure the innocents figured death itself was charging them in a metal cocoon with swords of fire in either hand. I caught half a dozen pellets before I reached them, but I was still on my feet. As a weaponeer, I'd been issued heavier armor than the rest of the unit, and I was relying on that extra layer of metal now. Once into range, I cut and thrust. A force blade is far from a precision instrument, but it's a lot cleaner than a plasma cannon. I jabbed into soft, unarmored flesh, opening up chests and lopping off heads. Between my efforts and the careful marksmanship of my fellow squaddies, the enemy lost half their number and most of their nerve. In a last act of defiance, one of them lobbed a brightly glowing blue-white object toward the group huddling around the crate. "Grenade!" I shouted. Troops scrambled, crawling and dragging themselves away. The crate was left smoking and black. Our assailants ran every which way. I felt like chasing them down, but was ordered back to the skimmer. I rejoined Leeson there as he walked down the ramp to the broken crate. "Let's see what the hell we've been fighting over," Leeson said, peering through the hole in the roof of the crate.
"Holy crap," he whispered.
I shouldered close to him and peered inside.
"Discs of metal?" I asked. "What are those? Wait a minute."
It took me a second before I recalled a museum trip from long ago.
"Those are Imperial coins. Galactic credit pieces."
On Earth, we still used cash, in some cases for local commerce. But galactic cash had been outlawed nearly a century back. All Imperial currency was accounted for in electronic form. Originally, this had been sold to us as an economic and environmental boon. Over time, however, many had come to suspect that if all money was a figment inside a remote computer, it was all really under the control of hegemony, and beyond them, the Galactics.
That's money. Real money, I said.
That's right, son,
Claver said, walking up to the crate and staring inside it with the rest of us.
Untraceable imperial cash. Each of those coins is worth more than your annual pay. And they're not ours. Keep your hands off.
Leeson frowned at him. You're right, of course, Claver. We're not thieves. Claver gave a nasty laugh. Leeson's frown deepened. Our clients are dead, and we're stuck out here in the street with this shattered box, he snapped. Do you want us to walk away?
No. My clients are plenty rich enough to afford a second life. When the cleanup crew shows, they'll scan them and order revivals immediately. They'll be billed and released. I'd be surprised if they don't show up again within 2 hours.
Isn't there going to be a bit of tough explaining to do when the local police arrive? I asked.
Claver gave me another of his unpleasant laughs. This time it was louder and more insulting.
What are you? Some kind of dumb cracker. We are the police, boy. At the very least, we outrank any local badge they'll bother to send out here. Why do you think these people wanted to hire us in the first place?
Looking around and examining the bodies, I lost count at around 70. There were only a few legionnaires among the dead. I reflected that when I'd helped arrange for Earth to become the local enforcers in the Galactic Empire, this wasn't exactly what I'd had in mind. Chapter 13. Once the violence had ended and we'd established a perimeter, officials began to arrive. The first responders were Tau in the medical personnel colors of blue with yellow lateral stripes. They ignored us and moved to inspect their dead fellows. Checking each citizen's DNA with instruments, they began to chatter excitedly amongst themselves. Old Silver watched with interest.
They're pretty happy. This bunch of stiffs must be worth thousands to them.
I bet. After all, they dumped about 1 million galactic credits out of that box.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they own the cash. They could be couriers, just as we are. But I would bet they aren't. Couriers wouldn't raid a revive. They seem to be actual traitors. They'll have the coin to buy their lives back, and it won't come cheap. They base the price on a percentage of net worth, you know.
I frowned thoughtfully and dared a question.
May I ask, sir, what we were transporting for them?
Are you stupid, son? He demanded. Guns, of course. They're gun runners. What else would be in crates of that size that would be worth hauling down to the planet's surface?
Stunned, my eyes widened. Guns? So this is an illegal operation, and we're aiding some kind of rebel force on the planet below?
Claver shook his head. You make it sound dirty. What do we care? Maybe the guys downstairs are freedom fighters. Maybe these fat cats up here on Gelt Station are lording it over them, hoarding all the trade money. I don't know which side is heroic. I don't even care. I'm here to collect some pay and get out. I suggest you do the same.
But isn't this against the law, sir?
Law? The only laws that matter out here are those imposed by the Galactics. And you know as well as I do, they don't give a rat's ass about the internal politics of any star system. As long as these tech worlders don't go off and attack another system, the Galactics don't care. And we shouldn't either. Other than us, there are only a handful of humans within light years. Grow up, McGill.
But, sir, these are Imperial credit coins. Trading with them is illegal.
I could tell he was getting angry, but he answered me anyway.
We didn't do that. They did. We were just the bodyguards. We were paid with legitimate digital credit. Don't you forget that.
I wasn't sure that the Nabs would see it that way, but Claver had actually presented compelling points. I knew that the Galactics couldn't care less what happened here in the Tau Ceti system. Star systems were free to have all the civil wars, rebellions, and
even vigorous genocides on their own turf, they felt like. The empire was too huge and spread out for any central governing body to get into fussing with local politics. As long as the Tau kept their trade goods flowing and didn't build starships to bother other members of the empire, no one would do anything about their behavior. Still, I felt as a part of the local enforcement branch of the empire, we owed it to our neighbors to do better than taking bribes and participate in gun running. Hadn't we moved on past taking any job we had to just to survive? What was the point of being official representatives of the empire if we didn't improve the lot of other species when we came into contact with them? I believe reputation matters in the long run, I told Agent Claver. These Tau are weasels, I'll give you that. But I have hopes they might come to trust and rely on us in time. Maybe I'm being naive, but that's the way I feel about it. Claver rewarded me with a long, hard laugh.
You've got to be kidding me, he said. Listen, son, the bigger the city, the worse the people behave. This whole planet is nothing but one endless city. Any local will cut your throat just for the privilege of selling their own mama. And they'll take a bent credit piece for it, too. The ones that live downstairs on the planet's surface are even worse.
What he did next surprised me. It wasn't the act itself, but the brazen quality of it. He walked over to the cracked-open crate, reached in a hand, and scooped out a jingling handful of coins. His hand dipped in again, but by that time I had my gauntlet clamped over his wrist.
"What are you doing, specialist?"
he demanded in a growling tone.
"I'm stopping a blatant attempt at theft, sir."
He looked at me in disbelief.
What are you, stupid? We can't leave these coins sitting here in the street. I'm going to fill a sack, and I suggest you do the same. Together, we'll get this cash to safety.
The adjunct was getting under my skin. I felt I had to say something that would worry him. I think I should inform you, Adjunct Claver, that I'll be reporting this incident to Centurion Graves. He snorted.
Let me give you a piece of advice, kid. Your outfit is going to be left here on your own in another week. I didn't get silver hair by making mistakes. You should learn all you can from an old hand rather than trying to screw with me.
I made a sweeping gesture. We've lost several men. We've been taking bribes and aiding gun runners. You don't think that's worth reporting? He struggled with me, but I shook his arm until the coins dropped back into the crate. He growled in frustration.
You're the one that wouldn't take the tip, aren't you? He asked me. You don't want your cut? Fine. You run off and tattle. In fact, I don't care if you tell your prissy tribune as well. Germanica will be gone soon enough.
When I was sure he didn't have any coins in his pockets, I let him go. He stalked away, got into the skimmer, and said something to the blue turtle. To my surprise, they lifted off and flew away. I watched him leave with my mouth hanging open. Adjunct Leeson left his position on the steps of the bank and rushed over to me.
What did you do? He demanded.
I guess we didn't see eye to eye, sir.
No shit, he said. He just took off. What the hell are we supposed to do with these clients and their money?
About the money, I said. He tried to take that with him. Leeson glowered at me.
You pissed him off, didn't you? Did it occur to you that he's our guide on this planet, that neither you nor I have a clue how this society operates while he's been here for several tours over decades?
He did say something to that effect, I admitted. Once Claver was gone, the attitude of the Tau officials around us changed. The officials who'd been inspecting our dead clients stepped up and said something in their clacking language. Claver had taken the translator with him, but we got the gist of it when he put out a hand, palm up, and made a grabbing motion with it. I think he wants to be paid, sir, I said to Leeson. Leeson threw his arms wide.
This is a friggin' mess. How can we pay him? How do we know how much we owe?
The official pointed toward the cracked crate of cash on the bank steps.
No, no way, Leeson said. That's our client's money.
Irritably, the town medical people left us there. They took the bodies with them, and I watched closely to make sure they left the cash in place. Other officials had removed the bodies of the thugs and civilians. In each case, they tested them to see if they were worth reviving. A few were and were carefully loaded aboard flying machines. The rest were piled into a single cart and dragged away. I had the feeling they would end up in that river of sludge that flowed everywhere beneath the streets. The Tau weren't much for respecting their dead, unless the dead were rich.
What about Claver? I asked Leeson.
Harris answered my question.
He's forwarded his data link to some bullshit box that's full of messages. How's that for a hint, McGill? He's too pissed off with you to help out.
What about headquarters? When can we expect relief?
Adjunct Leeson sighed and came close. He put an arm around my shoulders, but it wasn't a friendly gesture. He spoke directly into my ear.
Did you see me take a bribe, soldier?
He asked me.
I'm not sure, sir, I said.
Some people might see it that way.
Do you think that I want to explain all this to Graves or anyone else?
No, probably not.
That's right. We're not calling headquarters. We're handling this by ourselves. You're a big boy. You shouldn't be worried about a little bank robbery attempt.
Adjunct Leeson gathered the group, patched up the wounded, and talked over his options with Veteran Harris in a low voice. The sky darkened as we stood around over the next half hour. I got the feeling Veteran Harris and Leeson weren't sure what to do. Maybe they were waiting around to see if our clients did return to claim their cash. After all, Claver had said they would. As night fell, businesses closed and the streets emptied. Then a new delegation appeared. This time they stood at the top of the steps of the bank. A group of lightly armed bank guards from the pyramid-like building we were squatting in front of came down toward us. We eyed them warily, kept our fingers on our triggers, but we kept the muzzles of our weapons aimed downward. It was about this time I realized Claver had screwed us by dumping us here. He'd guided us across the city, a place he knew well, while we were completely out of our element. We'd been left with the credits we'd been guarding, but we had no idea what to do with them. Should we take them back to base? Not easily done, even if the crate hadn't been damaged. We couldn't just leave the money out here. What client for any future subcontract would trust us after news of that got out? We were armed guards. Our clients were dead. And the crazy officer who'd made the deal had bugged out. We were well armed, but clueless. It was an uncomfortable situation. The bank guards came closer one step at a time. They looked at us as if we were feral zoo animals somebody had left out of a cage. Leeson stepped forward to greet them, reaching toward them as if to shake hands. At first they drew back. They chatted amongst themselves for a second, and then one of them produced a local Tau System 10-credit piece and slapped it into Leeson's hand. Leeson looked at it in confusion. The guards moved forward with more confidence after that. They approached the broken crate and peered inside. Immediately, they became excited and spoke rapidly amongst themselves.
Sir, I said to Leeson, who'd been watching the guards without comprehension, I think they're trying to take the money.
Good, he said. That's what we're supposed to do, isn't it? Deliver the funds to the bank? If the guards take it up those steps, it's their problem. Then we can focus on the walk home.
I don't know if that's a good idea, sir, I said.
Said Harris, stepping into the conversation. I have to go with McGill on this one, sir. The yellow light of greed is shining in the eyes of those guards. They'll steal it all the second we turn our backs.
If you can't trust a bank, who can you trust on Tau City?
Leeson demanded. This money isn't in the bank's hands, and it's cash. Harris said in a low voice. Untraceable old-fashioned imperial coins. There aren't too many guys back home I'd trust either.
Leeson made a sound of disgust. I could tell he'd been hoping to unload this problem onto someone else. At least he hadn't spent all his time trying to figure out how to steal it. I had to give him high marks for that. All of us knew we'd never get these coins home to Earth, much less get away with spending them on anything. Leeson approached the bank guards, making shooing motions.
Back! He shouted. Back into your bank, you thieving rentals! That's not your money!
The guards chattered at him in irritation and didn't move. I stepped back a pace and looked around the street. It was surprisingly quiet. During business hours, there had never been less than 1,000 people in sight. Now there were only 12 or so.
Here,
said Leeson irritably, producing the 10-credit coin and handing it back to the bank guards. Reluctantly, they took it and retreated, when Harris prodded a few of them with his gun. As the last man walked by, I reached out and clamped onto his wrist with my gauntlet.
Just can't let a fight go by, can you, McGill?
Harris demanded.
Check his pocket.
Harris did while the man hissed and sputtered. 3 of the 1,000-credit coins jingled into his hand. Harris tossed them back into the crate, and I let the guard go. Rubbing his hand and flaring his mouth tentacles at me, the guard walked back up the steps and into the bank. I was pretty sure he wasn't blowing me kisses.
All right, McGill, Leeson said. I've requested a private skimmer. It'll be expensive, but I'll pay for it. Unfortunately, I've just gotten the word it won't get here until morning. Apparently, flying vehicles are shot down automatically by these banking structures after business hours. Too many robbery attempts. Lucky us, we get to spend the night out here.
I said thoughtfully. Where are the local cops, sir?
We don't get support from their kind. First off, you have to pay the cops on Tech World to help you out. They charge by the minute. Secondly, they avoid us like the plague. We're now officials of the Empire. We are like royalty, but royalty despised and feared by everyone. They don't want to mess with us, so they're staying away. We're on our own, for good or bad.
Only one choice, then, I said. We've got to get these coins off the street and back to headquarters.
This part of the city shuts down after business hours, specialist. Headquarters is at least a 10-kilometer walk. We'll wait for the skimmer.
Let's carry the coins toward the foreign quarter, I suggested, not liking the idea of spending hours out here in the dark. Rentable transportation is available nonstop in that district. We'll find a local skimmer with one of those crazy turtles driving and make their day.
There were a number of complaints, but the idea was finally accepted by everyone.
We reached into our armor and pulled out our own shirts, tying off the sleeves to make sacks. Each man filled a sack half full, and the coins were jingling over our shoulders as we set off. Kiwi marched at my side.
"This has got to be new ground on your list of crazy ideas, James," she said.
"Would you prefer to stand guard next to that broken crate all night?"
"No," she admitted. "We do have to keep moving. You understand that Claver will be coming back for these coins, don't you?"
I glanced at her, startled. "He can't get past us."
"Of course not. But a full unit of Germanica troops could. Or even 1,000 more locals."
I frowned, alarmed by her ideas. "You really think this place is so lawless that our legions are that corrupt?"
"Think it over," she said. "Why would Claver come to us and gather us together to do this job? Why not use Germanica troops? I don't know the average size of a crooked deal on this planet, but this has to be a big one. Claver sought us out and tricked us into escorting money blindly. Now he's disappeared. I think he likes money. What do you think?"
Turning that one over in my mind, I had to admit Kiwi had a good point. She'd been thinking it through, as I should have. I'd been so concerned with the situation at hand, I hadn't been worrying about the bigger picture.
"Maybe," I said, "he was the one who'd orchestrated this disaster from the start. How did those grav clamps malfunction?
Germanica troops had the crate before we did, and as I seem to remember, he knew those Legion troops by sight when we met them.
Kiwi nodded.
Now your brain is working again. We're in the middle of something big, and we aren't in control of the situation.
I relayed Kiwi's fears to Leeson, but he didn't seem very receptive. Sometimes an officer doesn't want bad news so much they'll ignore it completely. Leeson was in that mode now.
Just keep marching, he shouted at me. Stop making things complicated. This is your damned plan, McGill, so live with it. If someone shoots us, we shoot back. If they kill us all, then we all get a revive and I'll kick your ass afterward.
If you've ever wandered a strange alien city at night, you know how unfriendly such places can be. There were drifting masses of people, most of whom avoided us. When we posed questions to passers-by, a few had the guts to offer us random goods for sale, but most scampered away as if we were a gang of potentially violent lepers. Once we'd left the financial district behind, I'd half expected a rescue vehicle from headquarters to locate us. But it didn't. I was worried as I trudged near the end of the line watching for trouble. My suit was at half power already, and I didn't like the idea of running out of juice out here. Veteran Harris drifted back to me, and I winced at his approach. He hadn't been too sweet on me since the training incident aboard Minotaur. Come to think of it, he'd never been too happy with anything I'd ever done in service to the Legion.
McGill,
he asked,
you asleep in that suit of yours?
No vet, right as rain.
Ha! You're as crooked as that nut Claver, if you ask me.
I eyed him, wondering why he'd come back to talk to me. As he wasn't making it obvious, I figured I'd prod him a little.
Hey, vet, why haven't we met up with any of the other units out here?
Harris snorted.
You should be able to figure that one out by yourself,
he said in a lowered voice.
And if you do, keep quiet.
I thought about that for about 30 seconds. As I pondered, it began to rain. Real frigging raindrops, I couldn't believe it. Carlos had been right. If the Tau had set up dehumidifying fields on the distant roof, they were failing utterly. Suddenly I looked to the front of the platoon. There was Adjunct Leeson marching alone. At last, I figured it out.
They're in cahoots, I said.
Cahoot?
I mean Leeson and Old Silver. They're in this together, and now we all are.
Locked in tight. He doesn't want anyone coming to rescue us.
Did he even call in and report what happened, vet?
Harris looked upset.
Just keep quiet about that, he muttered. Leeson did what he had to. He's a good man. If a little slow to see a trap when it's laid at his feet.
Nodding to myself, I figured Harris was right. We'd taken bribes, lost men. And we were marching around with high-value credit pieces slung over our back in wet sacks. For all I knew, the coins were as illegal here as they were back on Earth. There had to be a serious reprimand in Leeson's future if anyone higher ranked figured out all these details. The first they'd want to know was what idiot was in command of this fiasco.
Leeson's scared, I said. Shh, shut the hell up. You can't say that about your officer, especially if it's true. Why do I even talk to you anyway?
Because deep down you have feelings for me, vet.
No, you don't have to say a thing, 'cause I know it's true. That was the sort of thing Carlos would have said, but I didn't care. It had the effect I was hoping for. Harris flipped me off and moved back up the line, slapping at troops who were about to let their bags rip. He demanded that each of them keep their heads, weapons, and peckers upright. It was about midnight when we finally reached a more civilized region of the city. Here we found buzzing skimmers for rent. I longed to climb into one of those flittering taxis. I didn't even care if the pilot was a mad alien who made me puke. I just wanted to get to my bunk and crash. Adjunct Leeson trotted forward, flagging down the first transport he saw. He waved, and the craft drifted closer.
Suddenly, just as the skids touched down in the stained street, it reversed itself and lifted off again. I could hear Leeson's curses even without squad chat turned on.
"Did you see that?" he demanded. "What the hell kind of civilization are these aliens running here? They must have known we have money we can pay, but they don't want to pick us up."
"Maybe they're no trouble when they see it, sir," I suggested. Leeson marched back along the line toward me. I guessed right then that everyone who'd ever told me I had a big mouth had had a good point. Leeson's eyes were more than a little tired and crazy when he got to me.
"What do you suggest, McGill?"
he asked dangerously. I unlimbered my sack of coins, reached inside, and pulled one out. It gleamed and flashed in the rain, reflecting the city lights.
"I'll go up to the taxi station at the end of the block. I'll wave this around until one of these greedy bastards takes the bait. He'll have to take the rest of us to get it, but by that time I'll be aboard his skimmer."
Leeson's face changed. His rage subsided, and he nodded. He reached out and snatched the coin from me.
"Good plan," he said, "but I'll do it. You look like some kind of armored ape, and I don't want to spook them."
We huddled up while we watched Leeson march to the taxi station. He mounted the steps, which clanged as if they were made of black iron. He reached the top, which was unmanned, and lifted his coin into the air. The effect was immediate, but unexpected. Someone did notice, but not the right someone. An air car packed with half a dozen Taos swooped, and a nose-mounted beamer flashed blue-white. Leeson didn't even know what hit him. He was burned down to his boots. The golden thousand-credit coin rolled back down those black metal steps, clinking and clattering.
Chapter 14
"Ambush!" roared Harris. "Take cover!"
Troops separated and crouched behind anything they could find. I straightened my back and unlimbered my weapon. The air car did a loop and came cruising back toward us, picking up speed. What can I say? It was luck, really. I fired first because I had to. The lucky part was that I had my beam cranked down into a narrow field, and I managed to hit them with my first shot. The air car lost its stabilizers on the left side, and it was thrown into a spin. I found myself sprinting and diving for cover. It splashed down with a cascading sheet of white fire onto the street. We lost a man there, and I felt bad about that. But the rest of the platoon clapped me on the back, and even Sargon came to me, shaking his head.
"That was Class A shooting, kid," he said.
"You should try dying more often," I told him. "I find it sharpens my reflexes."
Sargon laughed and moved off. Generally, in small unit actions, it was standard procedure to separate specialists, so they didn't all get wiped out at once. Natasha broke that rule by hurrying over to me.
"Are you okay, James?"
"I'm feeling better than those guys," I said, gesturing to the burnt Tau corpses lying in the wreckage of the air car.
Harris called us together and ordered us to retreat from the open street. We moved into a long, low structure that appeared to be abandoned, or maybe it was just under construction. It was hard to tell the difference on Tech World. Natasha followed along, talking fast.
"I was worried about that possibility."
"What possibility?"
"They were waiting for us," she said. "Didn't you see that? They knew we had to come this way, and they knew the financial district was a no-fly zone. So they waited here in the tourist section until we showed up. I bet every skimmer driver on the street has been paid to tip off whoever is hunting for us."
"Who are they, exactly?"
She looked at me as if I was being dense. I get that often, but I think it's because if I don't get something, I confess ignorance right up front. A lot of people prefer to pretend they know what's going on even when they don't. As a general rule, I only fake competence when I'm flirting with women.
"I'm talking about those gangsters, whoever they were. The people who tried to hijack this cash at the bank."
Maybe, I said.
"Who else would have been ready to swoop down on us that way?"
"Just about any thief on the station. If you haven't noticed, they're a little obsessed with shiny coins."
"We should just dump this cash," she said with sudden feeling.
"Why?"
Why get ourselves killed? We did our job. We aren't getting paid anything extra for dying over some crook's treasure.
You have a point there, but the platoon took payment. We've got a rep to establish on this.